Support comes from Sunday Morning Cafe, presenting Resilience and Creativity, a concert and interview with Royce Martin, creator of Swag Time, and resilience researcher Dr. Tom Wagner on August 2nd, SundayMorningCafe.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Tuesday, June 23rd. I'm Abby Larico. The Trump administration has put approvals for new wind power projects on hold, and that means good-paying jobs that were going to new union laborers are disappearing.
We're investing in those young people to build our next generation of infrastructure. We're not sure where we're going to put these brand new laborers to work.
How it's impacting the industry and communities, coming up after this news on The Gateway. A St. Louis alderman is calling the city's current budget process undemocratic as officials move closer to a final budget vote. As St. Louis Public Radio's Kayvon Mansouri reports, aldermen are worried that the city's financial future is at stake.
Tempers flared at a special meeting of the Board of Aldermen as members voted to move forward with a budget altered by decisions from the state-appointed police commission. Last week, the commission approved large raises for higher-ranking officers, a move Mayor Kara Spencer warned would put the city into a difficult financial position. But the city has no say in the board's decisions outside of Spencer's lone vote. Ninth Ward Alderman Michael Browning voted against perfecting the budget with four other aldermen. He says the city should not capitulate to the police commission.
If we acquiesce to what the Board of Police Commissioners have done at the 11th hour, at the last minute, we are giving up our freedoms, giving up our autonomy.
Aldermen will take a final budget vote on Friday. I'm Kayvon Mansouri, St. Louis Public Radio.
Meantime, St. Louis's police department says it's continuing to work to get the funding it believes it's owed in the city's budget. The spending plan for next fiscal year that the Board of Aldermen gave initial approval to yesterday gives the SLMPD $220 million, but the department has said it needs $250 million. Public Affairs Director Mitch McCoy says the extra $30 million is for future raises and new vehicles.
I know that many of the commissioners have had private conversations with most of the Board of Aldermen, and we will continue to work with all of our stakeholders to make sure that the SLMPD has what we believe we need to effectively operate.
The required level of funding for the police department is the subject of multiple ongoing lawsuits. The city of St. Louis is launching a nationwide search to land the next executive director of Lambert International Airport. Outgoing director Rhonda Hamnabrighi is retiring in August after 16 years in the position. Mayor Spencer's office announced the formation of a six-person search committee with experts on aviation, governance, and corporate leadership. The next airport director will oversee the consolidation of Lambert's two terminals into one larger terminal over the next several years. The committee's goal is to have a candidate recommendation for Mayor Spencer within the next few months. State Auditor Scott Fitzpatrick says Missouri is on track to run out of money in the next year and a half. But he also says a proposal to eliminate the state income tax won't make the problem worse. Fitzpatrick issued a report earlier this month that indicated the state's deficit spending is not sustainable and a depletion of the reserve funds is 16 to 18 months away. Speaking on the public radio show Up to Date, Fitzpatrick says the proposal to eliminate the income tax and replace it with additional sales taxes could help solve the problem.
The economy is shifting more and more to a service-based economy, and so we are only taxing goods are about 30% of all consumer spending.
Fitzpatrick says eliminating income tax for local businesses could help make the state more competitive and encourage economic growth. The income tax proposal, known as Amendment 5, will be on the ballot August 4th. The Missouri Department of Transportation says the safety, reliability, and maintenance of the state's highways are its top priorities for the next 25 years. But as Jana Rose Schleiss reports, it could be a challenge to meet those goals with its current funding.
Although transportation funding has been included in state budgets from both the Parson and Kehoe administrations, a recent MoDOT report states current revenue sources are not keeping pace with growing needs. MoDOT Central District Engineer Michelle Watkins says budget challenges could compound due to the changing nature of cars.
hybrid vehicles or electric vehicles, while they're great for their impact to the environment, for instance, that's a great thing. They don't generate the same kind of revenues for transportation in the form of the traditional gas tax.
The report notes that there are $1.3 billion of, quote, high-priority unfunded needs. I'm Jana Rochleis.
Planned Parenthood clinics in Missouri hope to soon offer telehealth options for medication abortions in the state. St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Fenton reports clinics in St. Louis, Columbia, and Kansas City are offering medication abortions for the first time in years starting this week.
Planned Parenthood affiliates began scheduling medication abortion appointments over the weekend after a Kansas City judge ruled many of the state's abortion restrictions violate the state's constitution. One of those restrictions included a requirement a physician must be present when a patient takes the first pill to induce an abortion. Emily Wales is CEO of Planned Parenthood Great Plains.
Our plans are to expand, and that was one of the most exciting things that we got to talk about at trial and thinking about what a future would be without medically unnecessary restrictions.
Missouri Attorney General Catherine Hanaway says she plans to appeal the decision to the state's Supreme Court. Voters approved an amendment in 2024 that ensured Missourians the right to the procedure. I'm Sarah Fenton, St. Louis Public Radio.
The annual Arch Madness Tournament will now bring women's teams to St. Louis. The Missouri Valley Conference announced its women's basketball tournament will move to St. Louis, joining the men's tournament that has been held here for more than three decades. The NCAA's decision to expand the number of teams in its tournament also prompted some changes to Arch Madness. Valley will now give automatic bids to the tournament semifinals for the top two seeds in the regular season. Commissioner Jeff Jackson says that reduces the chances of an upset that could hurt a school's chances of getting an NCAA tournament invite.
I think it's in our best interest to try and see if those teams can have whatever opportunity that they've been able to earn through their regular season success to put themselves in the best position to take advantage of that.
Both the men and women's basketball tournaments will take place on the same weekend in early March. Organizers with the Missouri Valley Conference hope it will bring more visibility to the events. How about the tournament going on right now in Kansas City and in cities across North America? The second week of the World Cup has brought tens of thousands of visitors to our neighbors to the west, but some local businesses say they're not seeing the foot traffic they expected. Brett Dowell is the co-owner of Hammer's Dueling Piano Bar. He says packed streetcars, along with concerns for crowds, are driving away their regular local customers.
We're just trying to get our locals in, get the word out that it's not packed down where we're at, and we still need the business.
Other business owners say concerns about increased traffic are deterring Kansas City residents from non-essential shopping. Chandler Hodenstein is the operation manager of Cinderblock Brewery in North Kansas City.
These things happen. You never know. I think it's always a risk, and it's better to be overprepared than underprepared, and that's what I said all along. But yeah, I'm bummed out.
Hottenstein says that most visitors are in town for only a few days during the tournament, spending their time at heavily promoted attractions and not visiting small businesses. Back here in St. Louis, Forest Park turns 150 years old tomorrow. To celebrate, the Missouri Historical Society is hosting a traveling exhibit this summer, highlighting the, quote, history, evolution, and community impact of the park. Forest Park opened during the early years of the Industrial Revolution. The nonprofit Forest Park Forever says the park was built to match the large public parks in Europe and New York's Central Park. The intent was to provide a patch of green space that people from every social class could enjoy. The exhibit will be on display at different locations within Forest Park, including St. Louis Art Museum, the Science Center, and the Muni. It's on view now at the zoo's Living World. You can see it through September 9th. Billions of dollars in wind farm projects all over Illinois are on hold. It's having a huge impact on the energy grid and the economy. Charlie Shankler explains.
It's well known that President Donald Trump doesn't like wind-based renewable energy.
You can talk about windmills. They litter our country.
The Trump administration has what amounts to a moratorium on new wind farm projects.
We're going to try and have a policy where no windmills are being built.
Dane Simpson directs the Great Plains Laborers Employers Cooperation and Education Trust. It's a partnership between employers and the Laborers International Union, which lines up and trains workers for large-scale construction projects. His territory is central Illinois.
We're seeing a delay of $2 billion in private development, 2,849 megawatts, 800 turbines, 2,000 construction jobs, an estimate of 160 million to landowners.
Simpson says the impact also includes $536 million in property tax revenues, and that's just in seven central Illinois counties, including McLean, Peoria, and Tazewell. The roadblock comes at the federal level.
250 projects nationally, impacting 30 different states.
The American Clean Power Association says not only are 40,000 direct jobs at stake, there are also 110,000 supported jobs stimulated by the $54 billion in capital investment. Now, no wind farm project in the nation that didn't already have permit approval is moving forward. The economic implications go well beyond jobs, property tax revenue, and turbine rent payments. The American Clean Power Association estimates not allowing the U.S. to construct new wind projects could cost the national electricity grid an extra $361 billion over the next quarter century because of higher prices based on demand. Provisions of the President's One Big Beautiful Bill Act sunset tax credits if wind projects don't start construction by July 1. They won't qualify for the tax credits if wind energy projects are not in service in 4 years. Dane Simpson with Great Plains Laborers says that will become difficult if the blockage continues because big projects take 1 to 2 years to complete. And Simpson says this is not government sector spending.
You know, these are private companies that are wanting to invest in our communities.
The economic benefits are massive, but for Simpson, it's the job losses that matter. With such a long lead and logistical train, unions and wind farm companies work together on workforce development. He says the union feels like the rug was pulled out from under them. In Knox County in particular, that project is dead, not just delayed.
Our local put on 20 new apprentices that we got from career fairs from local school districts. We're investing in those young people to build our next generation of infrastructure. We're not sure where we're going to put these brand new laborers to work.
Without those jobs, Simpson says, union members will struggle to pay bills, feed families, and invest in health insurance and retirement. Simpson says delays in wind project approvals will create a gap. Some projects will be built this year, a few early next year, but after that, it'll end. There are bipartisan talks in Congress about permitting reform to de-escalate energy sector politics. Jason Grummet, the CEO of the American Clean Power Association, says it's pretty remarkable to hear senior administration officials asserting their strong support for permitting reform while actively driving the debate into the ditch by abusing the current system. Republican Congressman Darren LaHood says he's more confident the negotiations over permitting will continue.
We write the laws. We can put the enforcement mechanisms in place. We can legislatively dictate which direction it goes.
Jason Grummet says it's incoherent to pursue the goal of modernizing critical infrastructure while actively blockading domestic energy production. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
This story comes to us from member station WGLT in Illinois. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, thanks for listening to The Gateway.